Now we read from your emails. Our closed caption show last week on the future of deaf culture and American Sign Language brought more questions than we had time for. King Jordan, the president of Gallaudet University, was a guest on the show, and we've invited him back. He's assisted by interpreter Bruce Riley. Welcome back to Talk of the Nation, President Jordan.
Good morning. I'm delighted to be here.
Our first email today is from Teresa in Denver, Colorado. She writes, "Oftentimes miscommunication occurs during email dialogue because it doesn't pick up subtleties in language, such as sarcasm. Does ASL face the same challenges? How are they addressed?"
That's really a wonderful question. And no, ASL not only does not face problems like that, I think ASL is better able to communicate things like sarcasm than spoken language. You know, people think of ASL as just your fingers and your hands, but ASL is much more than that. American Sign Language is the whole body, and especially the face. And the reason that email or written communication doesn't pick it up is because you don't see. Spoken communication doesn't pick it up either. Spoken communication on the phone is not nearly as good as face-to-face communication. And that's because in that communication, people who are speaking English are actually borrowing from American Sign Language. So ASL is better than English.
Our next email is from Dawn Stiller of Virginia Beach, Virginia, who writes, "It is quite mesmerizing for me as a hearing person to watch deaf people converse. I worry that I'm being rude or perceived as an eavesdropper, and so more often than not, I avert my eyes. I would like to know what the proper etiquette and feelings on this matter are."
It's fine to watch, not fine to stare. Deaf people who are communicating in sign language are very much aware that their communication is visible. If they have something private or something they don't want anyone else to know, then they sign in a way that no one else can see what they're doing. But don't be afraid to look. At the same time, don't gawk and look as if it's a strange conversation. For me, I like it when people come up to me and say, "Wow, sign language, I would love to know more about sign language," and then we engage in a conversation.
Our next email is more a comment than a question. It's from John Flanders, father of a deaf child. "I was particularly concerned with the reply to the mother's question about her daughter's experience with the testing associated with the No Child Left Behind Act. Mr. Jordan's answer had the clear implication that because children who are deaf cannot hear, they should not be expected to have the same facility reading as their typical peers, and therefore should not enjoy the same expectations regarding standardized tests. President Jordan, would you like to respond to that?"
Oh, thank you for the opportunity to comment on that, because if that was the impression I gave, if people left that conversation thinking that I think deaf children should not be held to the same expectations or that we should not have the same high expectations for deaf children, that's absolutely false. We know that deaf children have the same abilities as children who can hear. We know that if they receive the appropriate education, support, and language, they'll achieve at the same levels. It's really a complicated issue, but what I'm trying to speak to, or what I was trying to speak to, was unfair testing. The standardized tests that are used often include questions such as, "Which of the following words sound like?" And then it gives you a word. Now, how can a person who was born deaf and grew up deaf know how to respond to what a question sounds like? What my concern is, and what a lot of research is taking place right now to address, is to assure that accountability is achieved through fair testing, that we don't discriminate against deaf people because they can't hear.
And lastly, with the Super Bowl behind us, Wes in Columbus, Ohio, wanted to point out that the huddle in football was invented by deaf players as a way to communicate the play. Players would surround the play caller while he would sign the play. Since they all could not hear the quarterback and see the ball snapped, the vibration of bass drums was used to start the play. King Jordan, is that true?
Absolutely true. We're very, very proud of the fact that the football huddle was developed here at Gallaudet University, and I tell that story all the time, so I'm delighted to hear that somebody out there knows that's true as well. Yep, we developed it here so that the other team couldn't see the signing, and now it's just a given that when a football game is played, everybody huddles. When they don't huddle, the press makes a big deal about it. Wow, look at that, a no-huddle offense. And when I see that, I think, wow, look at that, a no Gallaudet offense.
Well, thank you very much for joining us again and clearing up some of our listeners' questions.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
I. King Jordan is president of Gallaudet University. He was assisted by interpreter Bruce Riley. He spoke to us by phone from his office here in Washington. If you want a full transcript of last week's program on deaf culture, send us an email at totn@npr.org. Put transcript in the subject line and we'll send you the web address. If you have questions, corrections, or comments, please send them to us by email. The address is totn@npr.org. Please tell us where you're writing from and give us some help on how to pronounce your name. In Washington, Joe Palca, NPR News.